This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
From the Palmetto Swamps to the Piney Woods to the Oak Flats, you're listening to the Louisiana Bowhunter Podcast.
All right, everybody, it is opening day of the 2020 season, and this is episode 49 of the Louisiana Bowhunter Podcast presented by Relentless Boats. And Kyler and I are here, but we have two guests today, Mr. Michael Pepper. What's up, Michael?
How you doing?
So I'm actually at Michael's place, and we're hunting together these couple of days. And then we have Mason Spillman on with us for this episode, and I'm going to tell you a little bit more about Mason and let him introduce himself in a minute. But as always, just a reminder that our podcast is presented by Relentless Boats, a local boat builder in Louisiana. Check them out at relentlessboatsla.com. And, you know, just really encouraging everyone to go check out the dealer network that Relentless is building. And right now, things have gone so well that unfortunately they're not able to take any more custom orders for the remainder of the year, but you can still pick up a Relentless boat at one of the dealers all across the South, and Louisiana made, and great boats. And just, you know, follow along and check them out, support the state and our local outdoor manufacturers. That's Relentless Boats and relentlessboatsla.com. So Kyler, we're all just getting out of the woods. Actually, it's like 8:30 at night on opening day, and you'll be hearing this on the second day of the season. But how was your hunt?
Man, I finally did it. I finally killed something on opening day. Took a long time. Finally.
Oh, you did? So you just waited to tell us this after I hit record? We had no idea about this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's been on. I put it on my Facebook and stuff. I don't post a lot of my personal stuff on Louisiana Bowhunter, but yeah, I shot a doe today on public land, and went through, crossed about a 900-yard swamp, which we like barely got across it in knee boots, and this swamp butted up against a real nice oak flat transition area, and had a good wind for it, and got set up kind of late around like 6:20, like practically first light. And at 7:34, you know when you thought you saw something, but then you look and there's nothing there, and you look away for about 5 seconds, and all of a sudden there's freaking three deer standing out in the open like they just took a portal. That's what happened. I had three does come in, and they hung out behind a tree, and I was like, you know what, one of y'all is going down. And I shot her, and she went about 60 yards. I gave her till about 10:30, climbed down, and then dragged her back across the swamp, which was pretty hairy. And then we went and hunted. I hunted the same stand this evening, didn't see anything, but my buddy was hunting with me. He saw 9 on public, and then this evening all I saw was a coyote. So it might be a morning spot. But great hunt, man. Good day, you know, going in, first time hunting area, pretty much pointing on the map saying I'm going to kill a deer right there. And you do. It's fun. It's a blast, man. What about y'all?
Well, like I said, I'm hunting with Michael Pepper, and y'all remember Michael from an episode of the podcast. Last year we had him on. We talked a lot about scent control and just some of the ways that he hunts and how he utilizes scent control. And he's been very successful and a longtime follower of the Louisiana Bowhunter community. So I'm actually filming Michael. So, Michael, I guess we had a good hunt. I mean, we saw deer. We saw a nice buck that was one of the target bucks that he was after, and we didn't get a shot. So I don't know a whole lot about the setup other than I just walked in there and did what Michael told me to do. So, but it worked out pretty good. The wind was good. It was a beautiful afternoon. We
saw him at least.
Yeah, we did see him, and we had him pretty much in bow range. But Michael is pulling a Kyler and doing the how did Kyler put it? The most fun I never want to have again, and he's trying to hunt recurve.
Yeah, you're going to regret that.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So we saw a really nice buck that he's been watching all summer, and he came in there like he was supposed to, but just in all fairness, even with a compound, he was in range, but he was never in an opening where he could have gotten a shot, and he slipped off at dark. But, yeah, it was a good hunt. So, you know, good way to kick off the season. And we'll be back after him tomorrow.
That's awesome. Yep. That's awesome.
So I mentioned we have Mason Spillman is going to be our guest today. And Mason is a game warden in the state of Louisiana. And I'm about to bring Mason into the conversation. Before I do that, we want to say and just kind of give you guys a kind of a brief update about what's going on with Scree. Scree Extreme Mountain Gear, or Extreme Whitetail Gear in our case. You've heard us talk about them a lot on the podcast, and right now they're offering 20% off all of their whitetail bundles through the middle of October. So that is, they have an early season bundle, and they have a late season bundle, and then they have an extreme all season bundle, which would basically be every layer. So Scree being a performance layering system, there's lots of pieces to that system. So, you know, it's a great time if you're hunting this weekend and you decide, you know what, I just got to get some new gear, go check them out at ScreeGear.com, and instant savings, 20% off all bundles, and you get a free Scree T-shirt with any purchase right now while supplies last. So just really appreciate their support of the podcast and wanted to kind of pass that down to all our listeners and let them know.
Can I add a testimonial real fast?
Yeah, you can.
Since
go ahead.
Fresh.
Man.
All right, so I have 5 camo patterns on right now. Okay, 5.
It's like a quilt, then.
I am, yeah, exactly. I have 5 camos on. I have no shame. And but I do have my Scree. I can't remember the series name of it, but the Merino wool top.
Kayabab.
Yeah, sure. And I love this damn thing. And so I told you, I walked like 900 yards across the swamp. I drug a doe out. I walked back. And back again with all my stand. And this was one of those days where it heated up. It was like 53 in the morning, and it heated up to 80-something in midday. And I never one single time today got that horrible wet, hot, slash cold, sweating through my cotton shirt sensation. And I guess the best thing I can say about it is that it has made me never think about my layering system ever again. Like, I'll put it on, yeah. And I never think about it ever again. Like, that's yep. How I've...
That merino,
so I love this stuff.
Merino wool is the answer for breathability, insulation, all of that stuff. And I guess one more thing. I keep saying we're going to bring Mason on, and we keep talking. That's just what we do.
Yeah.
We were filming this afternoon, so I'm up in the tree with Michael. And the first deer we saw were a big doe, and she had a couple of fawns that were starting to lose their spots, and they... They fed around in front of us, and when they got to the right side, I couldn't see them because basically they were behind the tree from me. And after they finally fed off and left, he turned around and looked at me, and he said, "Thank God we're wearing this Scree camo, because that doe looked right through my soul."
That's great for a commercial.
So I couldn't see her, but yeah, apparently she went over there, and the little ones were nursing on her, and she had him pegged, but
oh yeah,
but we were hitting good. So anyway,
let's get Mason on.
Yeah, let's do. All right, so Mason, are you there, buddy?
I'm here.
Have you listened to all the bullshit long enough? You ready to talk?
Look, man, y'all are such good advertisers. Y'all got me a believer of Scree, and I've never put my fingers on.
So Mason is a Louisiana game warden, and I'm saying this very I'm just saying Louisiana game warden because I don't want to title you incorrectly. So tell us, you know, I guess officially exactly what you do and what part of the state you work in and all that.
Yeah, I'm my rank is sergeant, so I'd be Sergeant Mason Spillman. I work in Region 7, District A, which is compiled of East and West Feliciana, East Baton Rouge, and Ascension Parishes, along with the eastern side of Iberville Parish that's on the eastern side of the river. So okay. That's the district I work in. Region 7 also extends out to Washington Parish, but I don't really cross the Amite River.
Okay.
So, yeah, so Sergeant Spillman.
How long you been doing this?
Just made 6 years, the beginning of August, so a little over 6 years. It feels like a year, but everything flies when you're having fun, I guess.
I guess so. So one of the things, not one of the things, kind of the main thing that Kyler and I talked about when we came up with this week's episode and we wanted to have you on was we thought it would be kind of a cool idea to approach the conversation about opening weekend from the perspective of a game warden, because I'm sure of all the days throughout the year, this has got, or I don't want to say days, I want to say weekends, because we're really kind of talking about opening weekend, being that the season opens on a Thursday this year, but this has got to be one of the busier times of the year, I would assume, in your world.
Yeah, it is. You talk about the kid on Christmas morning sensation, and I get that. You know, with work, I get it times two with work and as a hunter myself. Yep. You know, I woke up this morning and I couldn't go hunt, but I knew that I was gonna, you know, have some consistent things going on at work and you know, we kind of do get slow towards the end of the summer after dove season, so it's always nice to wake up with that crisp weather and knowing that might get into something today. And so yeah, we love it. It kicks off our hunting season. We'll be pretty much bowed up from now till the middle of February and get another little break until turkey season in April. So today is one of those days that I think most every game warden dreams of.
Really? So what's going on, I guess? I mean, the obvious is just more hunters in the woods and kind of the start of the season and all that, but what are you guys, from a preparation standpoint or expectation standpoint, what's different about opening weekend as opposed to middle of the season?
Man, it really just all kind of starts. You know, we're on the summer. I mean, we're on the water during the summer on vessel patrols, and it's hot, and it's, you know, everybody's having a good time and drinking, and you gotta be the bad guy. And most of us are avid hunters, so a few weeks before bow season starts, the complaints will start rolling in about, you know, so-and-so is hunting illegally, or so-and-so is not going to get a license this year. I kicked this guy out of my club last year, and it's where he's hunting this year, and it's what he's doing. So we've kind of been in that groove for a couple of weeks, just, you know, compiling complaints, figuring out where we're going to work, when these complaints are going to, you know, take place or, you know, form as a actual crime, if that's what's going to happen. So, usually this morning I woke up, I actually worked a complaint last night and then woke up this morning and had a couple little things to go look at on some things that some people had told me, and also just went and checked hunters that I didn't have complaints on. Went up to Tunica WMA and on a few little private clubs around, and mainly just talking to people, seeing what they got on camera, how they planting this year, you know, just kind of getting back in the groove of it, but also, you know, checking licenses and deer, things like that. So it's, the opening weekend is, or the opening day is the best, because you actually get to go and act upon these things you've been hearing for a few weeks. But it kind of does start in the middle of September once the phone calls start piling in.
So y'all really get that many complaints? Like, and oh, you have to follow up? Do you have an obligation to follow up on them?
Yeah, we do.
Is there a choice?
Yeah, no, I mean, we don't really have a choice. A lot of times, I would say 90% of the time, my complaints come directly to me on my cell phone from people that I know, or, you know, mutual friends from people that I know. I get called. I probably have 20 phone calls a day from either people I know or people I don't know that got my number somehow. And a lot of them aren't complaints. A lot of them are questions. But, yeah, we do get a lot of complaints. And I said we have to look at all of them. There's some things that you can make a judgment on as soon as you hear it, you know, so you can tell the people that, you know, are actually calling in a valid complaint, and the ones that are just upset because they were kicked out of a hunting club last year. And you still would look at those things, but you kind of got to, you know, learn how to take what people are telling you in the situation the people are in.
I was going to ask you if you get a lot of vindictive complaints.
Karen calls.
Yeah.
My kids would say Karen calls, because my wife was telling me a story at the dinner table the other night about some woman at the doctor's office she was on the phone with that was being just ridiculous and whatever, and my son pipes up and goes, "What a Karen."
Yeah, we do get those. Kind of like I mentioned, you know, every year it's somebody was kicked out of a hunting club over something not even illegal, just a dumb club rule, or just got into it with the president, and it never fails. They call, and the president of that club's doing this and this, and you know, we look at it, because you never know who's telling the truth and who's not. A lot of times it's the latter. It's just someone calling to complain because they feel slighted. But we do make cases off of just random phone calls like that. So that's, yeah, it's 50-50. You kind of have to take them with a grain of salt, but in the same sense, think to yourself, now what if this is really going on? And they told me about it. I can't just turn a blind eye to it. So you got to put a little work into it, just to make sure that whatever's going on isn't true.
Well, what made you want to get into this, Mason?
I wanted to do it my whole life. So my dad was a Louisiana game warden, and you know, the kind of the thought around game wardens is you don't make any money, and it was true back when my dad did it. And I remember being a little kid, you know, talking to my dad. I'm talking 5 or 6 years old. He asked me, "What do you want to do when you be big? When you get big?" And I said, "I want to be a professional baseball player." And he said, "Well, if that doesn't work out, you need another plan." I said, "Well, I want to be a game warden like you." And he said, "You can do anything in the world, son, but you can't be a game warden. We just don't make enough money." And since then, it was kind of almost like a rebellious thing that I was going to do it whether he wanted me to or not. And I went to LSU and kind of was trying to find my way on what I wanted to do. And I didn't even tell my dad. I called one of his friends that he worked with, and I said, "Hey, look, I want to be a game warden. I can't get it off my mind. Whatever you can do to help me, just let me know." And he set me up. It's Mr. Brian Clark, and I'm eternally grateful for him and former Colonel Joey Broussard for helping me out. When my dad found out, he just kind of laughed at me, but I think he's more proud of me now than ever. So that's kind of my story on why.
That's really cool. I mean, it's awesome to know that someone that's serving in a public servant role feels like they, you know, they are in their calling. It feels good to know that someone working in your role has that kind of passion about their job, because, you know, you...
Yeah, man, it's a... I grew up, like I said, my dad was a game warden. I've got other family members in law enforcement, so I've kind of always had that servant in me. And I didn't... When I first got to college, I didn't think I wanted to be a police officer or even a public servant. I actually went in engineering, so... But I think, you know, just like those things that happen, if it's in you, it's going to come out. And it came out, and I did what I wanted to do, and I'm so proud. I wouldn't want another job for anything.
It's awesome. So I would imagine, I guess let's talk a little bit more about the here and now. I would imagine, and y'all correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember having better weather on an opening day in a long time.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
Agree.
We usually don't get this right here until about the third week of October, and then it comes and goes.
That's right, it goes away and gets hot again.
So you mentioned that y'all spent some time today out, you know, just talking with people and stuff. So what did you see and hear about success? I would imagine with these temperatures and this high pressure that people are finding some success.
Yeah, actually, the first thing that I heard when I worked late last night, so I didn't wake up till probably 8 o'clock this morning, and the first thing I heard was a text from a friend of mine. I'll shout him out, Colby Sykes. He killed a good deer in West Feliciana Parish that he had on camera for a few weeks now, and had it pretty much pinned down on when it was going to come out. Sent me a picture of his. Pretty sure it's a 9-point, pretty wide.
You want to hear something really funny about that? Because I talked to Colby a little bit earlier today.
Oh, did you?
Yesterday. He posts on his Facebook looking for a taxidermist. I've got one like tied to a tree. I'm going to seal the deal in opening morning.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
That's pretty strong.
Researching taxidermist.
That's pretty strong.
Yeah. Yep. Look, he called me last week, it must have been, and told me he had a good deer. He didn't send me pictures, and I don't blame him, but that he had a good deer and just was making sure on a few different little rules. And he said, man, I'm going to kill him the first day. He's coming out every day at the same time. He's eating the same corn pellet he has for a couple weeks. So, yeah, I saw that yesterday. I said, man, he might be getting a little too aggressive with this. And when I woke up this morning, he had sent me a picture of it. So that was the first thing I woke up to. And I went out and I checked a few guys on Tunica Wildlife Management Area up in northern West Feliciana Parish. And a few had seen some deer and a few hadn't. That's just kind of how it goes on Tunica. From what I saw, there was no kills up there this morning unless it was real early or after I went. And then I went to a few private clubs that I knew that the members bow hunt on and stopped, and two or three of them, no one was there. But I did talk to some guys at two different clubs, and same kind of thing. One or two people saw deer, the other two didn't. But man, the weather was so nice last night and into this morning when I was working. That wind was blowing a little bit. I just knew that somebody was going to kill a deer.
Yeah, I can imagine a lot of daylight movement with this kind of weather pattern. It's kind of surprising to me to hear about the guy. And I saw the post on Facebook and stuff too with Colby, but
that deer was mostly velvet, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was hanging off. That's, you know, the velvet was hanging off of it.
Yeah, and typically it's the afternoon where you're gonna kill a buck early season. You know, it's kind of
right.
To me, it kind of struck me a little different. Typically all these guys that have, you know, done their scouting and they got a deer kind of figured out, it's usually that opening afternoon, which is what Michael and I were trying to do with one of his spots. It almost happened, but he just
Man, I got one. I think it's pinned down. I think I sent y'all a picture of it earlier, but I don't want to jinx myself, but he's doing the same thing every day. So
yeah,
I'll be after him early in the morning and tomorrow evening and probably for the next 4 or 5 days. So.
Well, it's the weather's going to stick with us, and that's a good thing.
I know.
So
it'll be nice.
So what are some of the, I guess, more, I don't know, we're talking about opening weekend as opposed to the rest of your deer season. What are some of the common trends and things that you see, maybe from the stupid to maybe even the smart or whatever, just kind of trends that you see happen every year that seem to always happen on opening weekend that you don't experience throughout the rest of the year or not as much of?
It's just kind of the getting back into it, you know, especially opening weekend a bow, you know, a lot of times, especially opening weekend a gun, everyone you check won't be wearing their hunter's orange. So during bow season, you don't have to wear it. So that's kind of a thing that doesn't come around till gun, but you still do get the people, you know, in Area 6 right now, you can only kill you can't kill a doe until the 16th, and we didn't hear or see that today, but you know, some people will kill a doe before then, just and a lot of times it's just honest mistake, but we have a job to do, and then you know, there's rules for reasons, and so we'll deal with that, and maybe somebody didn't remember to print out their tags, or just kind of, you really don't see too much of the real serious crimes, the night hunting and the road hunting, spotlighting kind of things this early, just really because of the weather. Actually, I'm looking outside right now. It's a pretty bright moon and probably be a good night to work some night hunters. But I think the weather has a lot to do with those big things. So mainly early in the season, what I'm getting at is really a lot of minor things that we can warn about, and just kind of educating the public back again, getting back in the swing of things.
I would imagine. So I guess a little bit of I thought of this while you were talking. It's a little bit of a backstory to it. Like, so today, this afternoon, was the first time I've gotten it in a tree at all, other than just climbing up and checking a few straps and stuff. And I'm running camera, so I've obviously got a bunch of stuff to do to get up there and get it all set. And I thought to myself at one point, I didn't have any mishaps or anything stupid, but I thought, man, I'm rusty. You know, like I hadn't done this in so long. I'm hanging all this stuff off the tree, and I'm trying to make sure I'm being safe and all this kind of stuff. So how often do you guys get involved in basically, I don't want to use the term rescue, but having to get involved with helping somebody out because they just did something stupid or found themselves in a bad spot?
Yeah, we investigate hunting accidents, whether it's accidental discharge of firearms, falling from a tree stand, really any of those things. We have guys around the state, multiple guys around the state that are certified hunting accident investigators, and they went to a couple week long school, I think in Georgia or Florida, and learned all kind of different things about it. I'm not one of those, but it's really not very as common as you would think, and that may be because the whoever is injured is either it's not as major as, you know, maybe they're embarrassed and it was just a minor fall and they broke a finger or something, or if it is bad, you know, maybe they just call the ambulance right away and it never really gets reported to us. But we don't, man, knock on wood, and I don't want to jinx anything, but where I'm at, we don't deal with that too much. And I definitely understand what you're saying from climbing up in a tree and kind of feeling rusty, you know, with the way things have been going this past year with everything going on. I kind of feel the same way. I'm a little nervous about jumping up in one tomorrow.
Yeah.
But,
comes back pretty quick.
It's not too common.
So kind of along the same lines of what Locke just asked you, is there anything that you're not allowed to do in your role for liability reasons?
No.
Like if someone gets hurt or something like that?
No, we're certified first responders. Now, with that being said, we're not EMS or doctors, but you know, first aid for sure, CPR, we carry tourniquets, you know. If there's something going on in the woods, we're usually going to be the first people there and with the best means to get to wherever it is, usually is far and deep in the woods. So we'll render aid.
What would y'all do if somebody, I don't know, say somebody was in Tensaw or, well, in your area, Tunica, and their four-wheeler broke a tie rod or they ran out of gas and they called y'all? How would y'all handle that?
So a lot of times they'll call 911 and it'll go to the sheriff's office. And I live in West Feliciana Parish and Tunica's in West Feliciana, so we have a good relationship with the sheriff's office. They would call us directly, normally, the sheriff's office would, or the deputy. And normally on something like that, if it was just an equipment malfunction, we might could see if we could, you know, I'd bring my four-wheeler out there and see if I could pull it back to the road and help them get it back on the truck, or maybe just, you know, allow them to leave it out there and just get them out and deal with getting the four-wheeler out later. But, you know, our main concern is human safety, and you know, if we can't get a four-wheeler out, but we can get the human out, we're just going to go ahead and get them out of there, and we can deal with the rest later.
Gotcha. Okay. Because I had, as kind of an analogy to that, the Coast Guard, which I obviously y'all aren't affiliated. Like, if you run up on a sandbar in Venice, the Coast Guard will watch you and make sure that you're okay, but they're not going to tie up to you and pull you off from liability.
Right. And so and I was just wondering something like that. You know, the liability aspect of that. I work on a boat from May to August, from May to September, so we deal with a lot of those things down on Lake Marpaw, you know, broken down boats and things like that. You know, we're here to help people. We're here to serve people. So, you know, if we get a call and someone's broken down or in need of assistance, we'll pull them back. There's no problem with that. We're trained on towing vessels, and the sheriff's offices down there, Livingston and Central Parish sheriff's offices, are the same way. So we're not in the business of leaving somebody high and dry and just kind of saying good luck. We're definitely going to help out whenever.
Sure. So I'm circling back around to something you said a while ago, because I've been thinking about it since you said it, and this might come across as naive or stupid on my part, but you mentioned, you said you were looking outside and it was, you know, we got such a bright moon, you said it would be a good night to be out on patrol with the night hunters thing. Is that really that big of a thing that you guys are just like looking for night? I mean, it's always an open season type thing for you?
It's really that big of a thing. Now, it's obviously not that big of a thing in the summertime and in the warmer months, although it does happen. But in the wintertime, during the hunting season, a little before and a little after, there's going to be somebody working all night long and, you know, either working a complaint or working a highly traveled area at night where, you know, where maybe we've made cases before. But yeah, it's a thing. We deal with it every year. I don't know. In our district, we probably make on average of 6 or 7 night hunting cases hunting season.
So, in your opinion, just based off of your interaction with these people, what would you say is the primary motivation for people that get, obviously we've all heard the stories about people that just continue to do this stupid stuff. You know, obviously you got your I'm sure you have your cases where it's a couple of guys that are maybe out drinking or goofing off, and they're doing something they wouldn't normally do because they're just, you know, making a night of it. But you got these guys that I'm sure we've all heard they make a living out of this stuff. What have you, I guess, in your mind, like, what have you kind of come up with as the motivation for this? Like, why do guys do this?
Yeah, man, we call those people, this kind of people, job security. If I knew the answer to it, I might could fix it. I think in my mind, it's a little bit of thrill. It's a little bit of, you know, caught me once. Now I learned how you caught me, so you're not going to catch me again kind of thing. You know, I've never run across someone that was night hunting, spotlighting deer off the road that was hungry, you know. I've never run across someone that was in need of the meat that much that they were going to go shoot a deer off the road. It's like you said, a lot of times it's some guys, maybe from out of town that, you know, live in the city and out at the camp drinking a few beers and want to go ride around and make a poor decision. We run across that a decent amount. Other times it'll be 17, 18, 19 year old kids doing the same thing that are, you know, maybe local or from around the area. I think the main attraction to that is the thrill. Like I said, you know, we don't have in where I work, we don't have the people that quote unquote make a living out of it, but that we do have repeat offenders, and we have people that don't stop and do it again and again. And, but it's not like they're in need of the food. It's not like they're selling the meat. It's just, they want to, I guess they just want to see if they can outsmart us, and I'm sure they do a lot of the times. But when they don't, when we can finally catch them, we make sure to handle it to the full extent of the law.
So when y'all are out looking for them, are y'all using those robotic deer? It's like trying to essentially entice them, or are y'all just looking for activity, spotlights, and gunshots?
Man, I've been on 6 years, and I may have worked the robotic deer 2 or 3 times. That's, we have it at our disposal. It's not a thing that is used a lot, but not used often at all, I would say. A lot of times it's, you either get a complaint, in rural areas, you'll get calls all the time. I heard a gunshot down this road the other night at 1 a.m. And so, you know, a lot of times you'll go sit on that complaint, and it might take you 3 or 4 weeks before something comes up, and something may never come of it. I've worked a complaint on a road for the past 3 years where I know people are night hunting. I get calls from, it's not the same person calling me. It's everybody on the road calling. And I go work it a lot, and I hadn't called anybody on it.
Interesting.
It's just a time thing, and you know they're going when I'm not, and I'm going when they're not. So it'll all work itself out in the end. But to your point about the robotic deer, it's there for our use, but it's we can catch people with. We do catch people without that a lot of times. It's not a thing that is used very often.
Have you ever had? I'm sure this is way out of left field, so y'all gonna thank me later. Have you ever heard of somebody trying to shoot one of these things with a bow?
We do with crossbows. I've never caught anyone night hunting with a. Well, I've never caught anyone road hunting with a compound bow. We do catch people that'll go out in the climbers and lock-ons late at night with a light or a. The big thing now with all the hog population control thing going on is these thermal scopes. You know, you can stick a thermal scope on top of a crossbow and be dead silent. You know, you can do it in a neighborhood or anywhere and never get seen. So we do see that from the road. And like I said, we get the guys that'll go out in the middle of the night up in their lock-ons or climbers and bow hunt with a compound bow over a feed pile.
So how many times do you get told, or how many times is the excuse tried to be used that I'm just hunting hogs when you know good and well they're not?
Yeah, a lot. That happens a lot, and it's gonna happen more now that the permit's no longer required to hog hunt at night. That's just one of those things we've got to adapt to and figure out other ways to make deer night hunting cases, and we will. But to your question, yeah, we get that a lot, and there's things that you can ask and look for and see in plain view that'll make you determine that they're not hog hunting. I mean, if someone's got doe estrus or a bleat can or a grunt call or some rattles, they're not hog hunting, you know. And that's those things in their possession is not just a dead giveaway that they're deer hunting, because it could just be in their hunting bag. But a lot of times when we find those things and you get to doing a little more questioning, then you realize what they're really doing, even though you know the whole time what they're really doing.
Yeah.
I've got a kind of a different direction to go in, or as far as questions go, because part of the reason why I was excited to talk to you is because what's really interesting about wildlife officers, game wardens, is that there's people like me that have, and I really mean this, I have had nothing but good experiences in being stopped or being checked. And there's times that I've called you guys and said, hey, you need to look into this over here, and you know, whatever. Not and then you talk to somebody else and their opinion is you guys are scum of the earth. and that you're out to get them specifically, like you've been chasing their family tree their whole life, you know, for generations. And it's so incredible to me, because look, man, I've been in sales my whole life, so communication and trying to talk to people and be reasonable has gone so far with me that when I hear somebody say, man, I hate a game warden, or I can't stand these guys, or I always get a ticket no matter what. The only thing I can think of is you probably earned a ticket, number one, and then he locked it down on you from your attitude. So
right.
my question is how do we approach you guys? What's the right way? Tell us.
Man, look, there's just over 200 of us in the state, and I don't know a bad apple in the crew. We, you know, we're law enforcement officers, and I would want someone to approach me like they've known me my whole life, and that we saw each other at the grocery store. That's how I treat people, especially with the, you know, with the way things are going in the law enforcement community right now in the world. I find there's no reason to treat anyone with anything but respect. I've brought people to jail that shook my hand and told me thank you when I dropped them off. That's the way I operate. It's the way most of the guys I know operate. So if I was to give advice on that, I would say, man, just approach them like another person. We're not boogeyman. We're not out to get anyone. If you're breaking the law and you know, we determine that we're going to cite you or bring you to jail, then that's what it is. We got a job to do. And, we took an oath to protect and serve the Constitution. And, there's no one that I have been or am out to get. I know people that consistently violate the law, so they're going to get checked when I see them. And mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times they're violating the law again, you know, and they get written a ticket. But I'm also fair. I'm not going to write someone a fishing license ticket fishing with a cane pole in the Mississippi River and then see my high school classmate doing the same thing the next day without a license. I'm going to write them too, or I'm going to use discretion on both of them and not write either one of them a ticket, give them a written or a verbal warning. So, I don't ever want anyone to feel like they're like a wildlife agent is unapproachable. I think every one of us in the state are really good guys and girls and mean well, and just want to get our job done and talk to people and enjoy the outdoors just like everyone else.
Well, so I don't get checked very often, which is funny because you talk to some people and they'll tell you that they get checked every time they drive by at WMA. Don't even go into it. But I've been checked probably 10 times between hunting and fishing in my life, and I've never gotten a ticket. Two of those times I was after being, I don't want to say searched, that sounds kind of harsh, but after, you know, being checked, I had an offense. One was a duck hunt in Sherburne. Do you know TJ Ashley?
I sure do.
Okay, TJ Ashley was college roommates with one of my friends, my now husband's. That's a long family tree line. But anyway, I met TJ at Section 120 in Sherburne, and I was coming back from a duck hunt, and I had and still have this bad habit of unloading the chamber of my shotgun, leaving two in the plug, and I'll put it back in my case. Mm-hmm. And I just bad habit, right? I don't necessarily think there's anything particularly dangerous about it, which is probably why I do it or justify doing it. But it's not legal, especially
That's
on
right.
public land.
Not and, on WMA.
And so I did it and didn't even think about it. I pulled up to the launch. There's TJ, and I didn't know TJ at the time. We found out we knew some similar people through this engagement. And I pulled up. I said, "Hey, officer, my name's Kyler. You know, what's your name?" And he said, "Hey, you mind if I check your boat?" And he said, "Check my ducks, check the decoys, check the boat, check my license." And he's like, "Can I check your gun?" I said, "Sure, sure thing." Took you out of the case. He goes, "Sir, you've got two shells in the tube. You can't have that." And I legitimately at the time, I didn't know it. I didn't know that. And I also wasn't trying to like necessarily hide it per se.
Right.
And I was genuine in the fact that he said, "I'm very sorry. It won't happen again." Maybe in my mind, I kind of think of that as like a light offense, you know, no harm, no foul. It's not a huge deal. What's funny was right as we're going through this, guy pulls up on the right side of Section 120 in his boat. Two kids pull up. Kid jumps out, backs the truck down as fast as he can, puts the boat on the trailer as fast as he can, try to strap it down as fast as they can, right? and then TJ looks at me. He goes, "Hold on one second." And he goes over there, same thing. Gun in case, two shells in the tube, wrote two tickets. And he told me that. He told me that when he was done. And it was that moment that I realized, I said, "My God, how you approach another person means everything. First impressions mean everything." And so, you know, I don't want you to, like, tell me the secret sauce to letting people off the hook, but if you have made a true mistake, are you telling me that it matters greatly how the person you're checking takes that and, like, handles it and also handles their engagement with you?
I'm going to tell you this, that I've questioned a lot of people for a lot of serious offenses, and the number one thing that I tell every one of them after I get done reading them their Miranda rights before I question them is that I don't want to be lied to. I'm not. If you tell me what you did, I'm not mad at you. I'm not your mom or dad. I'm not here to punish you or yell or raise my voice. I've got a job to do. Tell me what you did. We'll determine the consequences, and we'll be on our way. The lying and keeping me out there for hours at a time trying to get one little thing out of you is what drives me up the wall. And a lot of us are like that, you know. But if you're doing something wrong, from not having a fire extinguisher on your boat, one of the most minor offenses, to shooting a deer at night, selling the deer meat across state lines, you know, just a compound of large offenses. If you tell me the truth, now I can give discretion on a minor offense and not on the selling deer across state lines on a deer shot at night. But I can do what I can to help you out. I will denote in the report that you were, you know, that you were very, you know, nice with me and cordial and told me right away what happened. That goes a long ways with prosecutors. So, but if you sit there and lie to me and I'm going to figure it out. A lot of times we learn this in our academy. If we ask you a question, we probably already know the answer to it. Mm-hmm. So it's in your best interest to tell the truth. And if you do that with me, I'm going to give you what you deserve. And I'm going to denote my report about, you know, how you acted and that you were, you know, that you were very cordial, like I said, and that goes a long ways with prosecutors. We get to court and the DA or the assistant DA says, look, what about this guy? And I'll say, you know, I'll tell him, man, you do what you do. This is your part of the job, but I'll let you know now he's a good guy. He messed up. He made a mistake, but, he told me what he was supposed to do, what he did. And I've got, you know, got no qualms with him.
Well, there's a psychological term called the Earth's part of, it's named the Pinocchio effect. And essentially what it means is the harder you try and sell a lie, and the more you keep talking, the more obvious it is that you're lying.
That's right.
Whereas if you answer, not that I'm like trying to teach people how to lie, but if you answer directly in short sentences or short words, or yes, sir, or like no, sir, that's not, you know, I haven't done that. Sorry, you think it or whatever. It's much more believable.
Right.
And so I'm sure you probably had to go through that in some of your training, because a lot of, I don't know how much of your job is reading people and reading situations, right?
A lot of it. And I don't know if it's just so obvious that, you know, anyone could see it if they were in my position, or if I have a knack for reading people, but it's once you get to someone and you have a reason to believe that they committed a crime, and you let them know their rights. A lot of people, when they hear their Miranda rights, you have the right to remain silent, anything you say, blah, 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 they freeze up and, oh, I'm going to jail. That's not what that means. All that means is, these are your rights before I ask you any questions that, you know, you could say something that would make yourself guilty. So, but when that happens, you can tell right away, the forehead will start sweating. They'll start kind of clenching the fist and the palms will be sweating. They'll pace. And it's like night and day, you know. So it's easy to tell.
Have you ever come across anybody where you're like, man, this guy's pretty good?
Yeah, oh, like, yeah,
he's a good liar.
We deal with people that have been in and out of jail for violent crimes, and you know, they know the system. They know how to talk to police in a way that that makes them believable, even though they're lying. And so, oh yeah, I've dealt with that a bunch. What's kind of, I don't want to say the word easy, but what makes that aspect easier about my job is most of the violations we deal with are either young people that are just making mistakes, or people that, you know, good, decent people that just made an honest mistake. So we don't have to worry about that too much. But yes, we do see that a lot. You know, you'll tell yourself or tell the guy you're working with, like, man, he's good. We're gonna have to really question him.
So I've got one last question. This is like, I don't do a whole lot of pre-prepared questions, but when Locke said that he was going to have you on the podcast, I was like, man, I've got so many things that I see people like that they even have the misconceptions or their misbeliefs. One of the things that I see that I think people are wrong on frequently is that, quote unquote, a game warden has more authority than any other form of law enforcement. When I see that, my belief is that y'all have a larger jurisdiction, but y'all still are constrained, if you will, by the same law system, legal systems of other departments. Am I correct there?
Yeah, you're correct. We do have a couple. The whole they can kick open your door and search anything without a warrant is, on a technical sense, true. Now, that would never happen. That's not how we operate. So easy to get a search warrant now that's pretty much obsolete at this point. But and we also do we also can stop vessels on the waterway without probable cause just to do a boat and safety inspection. So those are a little kind of, I don't want to say more power, but they kind of go over the scope of normal law enforcement duties that, say, a sheriff's deputy or a city cop or a trooper would handle. But yeah, we're you know, post-certified peace officers in the state of Louisiana. We went through a 28-week training academy that not only did we learn about wildlife, fish, game, and boating laws, but also regular laws. And, you know, the 8-week class that all police officers go through, we went through that plus 20 weeks of the boating stuff. So boating, game, and fish stuff. So yeah, No, we don't have any more power, quote unquote, than anyone else. But there is a few little tweaks in the law and things that we can do that a lot of time, 99, I've never, you know, kicked someone's door open just to go look for a deer meat in the freezers.
Never say never, Mason.
Man, it's so easy to get a warrant. You can get one online, and if you've got enough reason to believe that someone's doing something so illegal that you've got to go kick their door down to get in it, then you've got plenty enough probable cause and reasonable belief for a judge to sign a search warrant. And that takes no time. So I don't foresee that happening. That maybe was a thing of the past in the 70s, 80s, maybe. I'm not sure. But no, you're not going to see that.
Well, those are my questions, because when I found out we were having you on, I wanted to kind of remove the fog that is around wildlife law enforcement from the general public. Because, like I said, there's people that are really close with you. Like you say, you get reached out to 20 times a day on some days. And then you got a whole other demographic of people that you're like a ghost in the night. You know, never seen you, don't really believe you exist. Some really know you exist. Let me tell you this.
The people that you hear about that say, oh, the game warden's out to get me and hate me, and you know, they're always, they're up my sleeve all the time. I'll just say that I get a lot of phone calls from them too. So don't let people like that fool you.
Gotcha. That's funny.
Well, I think you've provided us a lot of information. I guess one thing I don't really know how to ask the question, but in kind of conclusion as we wrap up, I guess let's just call you our local game warden for sake of the conversation. Yeah. I mean, what are, I guess, a message that you might have for people, you know, that are loading up the truck tomorrow and heading to the camp for for opening weekend, you know, from your, what would you like to tell people? Anything that you would like to say if you could kind of hold court? Or
man, first and foremost, just be safe. You know, there's so many things that can go wrong, you know, from climbing up a stand to, you know, being in the stand and moving around to climbing down, from a safety perspective, that, you know, that's the main thing, is be safe. The second thing is have fun, you know, bring your kids out there, go with your family, go with your friends, let loose, pop a beer open if that's what your thing is, and have fun. That's what hunting's about. So that, you know, it's about the conservation of animals and having a good time. So those are my main two things. Just make sure, man, you can pick up a pamphlet from anywhere that you can get a hunting license, and just read up on your laws. Make sure you know what you should be doing and what licenses and gear you should have on you. And you know, like I said, have fun. That's the main part. I love nothing more than people may think, oh, the game warden wants to pull up and write 100 tickets. I love nothing more than to pull up at a deer camp and see a little 10-year-old with his first deer, and I get out the truck and he runs up to me, come here, look what I did. I get to run over there and see his first deer. That's the best part.
Yeah, that's
of
cool.
So cool. Just have fun. You know, we're there to do a job. You know, let us do our job, please. Let us check your licenses and your bag and not search your, I'm talking about your bag limit and you know, your game, and then after that we'll stick around and shoot the bull, have a little fun. I do like to get invites to come eat gumbo later, so if y'all are up to that, you know, whoever's listening, I just urge everyone that we're regular guys and girls too, that like to enjoy the outdoors, and we're not out to get anybody. We're just there to do our job and make sure that you know, the wildlife that we cherish and then y'all cherish too are there for the next few generations. So
awesome.
With that said, if there is any other things that you would like to talk to us about, we have a 24-hour number, 1-800-442-2511, and that is Operation Game Thief. If you have any complaints, anything of that nature, you can call that number, 1-800-442-2511, or you can go to our website or the TIP 411 website. So I'm not asking you to be a rat, but you know, there's some things that people do that just aren't right and that we need to know about. So other than that, I think that's all I've got.
Do y'all have any open cases against a gentleman named Michael Pepper right
now?
Come
on now.
I can't talk about any open cases right now.
I've heard that he actually imported Wisconsin deer in breeding them.
Yeah, I was trying to wait my turn. But I did want to say something towards your last question, Kyler, and Mason's answer to that. Several years ago, I know we're trying to wrap up, but several years ago, you know, there was a lot of stuff said about us night hunting and all on Facebook. And what I did is, since we film our hunts, I know three or four of them around here, really close, well, not really, really close, but somewhat close friends with them and have their phone numbers and everything. And I called one of them and got him over to the house and pulled up all our film, all our videos on computer. Just had we sat there for 2 hours looking at videos and all.
And jealousy is a sad thing.
It is.
I bet you get a lot of that, don't you, Mason?
We do.
Dude mad at his neighbor because he can't kill the deer his neighbor's killing.
That's right. He's killing it at night, or he doesn't have a license, and then you go and you check the poor man and he's doing everything right. And he just killed a deer that the neighbor had on camera too. So
yep.
It makes you sick, but like I said at the beginning, it's, you know, you can't just overlook things like that.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, it was a great conversation, Mason. We really appreciate the time. You that was a lot of great insight, and you know, I guess from us at Louisiana Bowhunter, you know, we're excited, as we've all been sitting here talking about, we're all hunting, and we know that probably everybody that listens to this podcast is probably going to make at least one hunt. at some point here this opening weekend. So, you know, just to reiterate what you said, be safe and enjoy it. Enjoy this weather, man. This weather is awesome. So even if you don't kill a deer, I think everybody that truly loves what we do with our free time is going to enjoy. I know when I climbed up in that lock on this afternoon and was getting set up and that north wind was hitting me in the face, it just all felt right in the world.
Man, what a feeling.
It did. So we're going to wrap up and wish everybody a fun and hopefully successful opening weekend. Thank you again, Mason and Michael, for jumping on here with us and doing this. And
oh, yeah.
We'll be back with another episode next week. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, buddy. Thank you. See y'all.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Louisiana Bowhunter Podcast. If you have anybody you'd like to hear on the show, reach out to us at info@louisianabowhunter.com. And if you want to help support Louisiana Bowhunter, go by your local archery shop and pick up some merchandise. If you don't have any at your local shop, let us know and we'll reach out to them. Or pick up your gear at louisianabowhunter.com and we'll ship it out to you same day. See you next week.